has the Democratic Party gone? Where have they gone where they're defending these two people over the state of Israel? And I think any Jewish people that vote for a Democrat, I think it shows either a total lack of knowledge or great disloyalty.
That was just the beginning, folks. Just the beginning. What up, what up? Welcome to the Michael Steele Podcast. I'm Michael Steele. Yes, that was the president doing the takedown on the Jewish vote. Folks, this was just the warm-up of what was a 30-minute session that the president did with the press that was one of perhaps the most unhinged and unprecedented communications by the president of the United States to help us kind of walk through where all of this is and what it possibly could mean is a gentleman who himself found himself on the end of the president's spear. It's none other than a good buddy. He's been on the show before. I had to get him back after this week, and particularly since he seemingly played a role in it. Juan Williams, author and political analyst for Fox News. His latest book is What the Hell Do You Have to Lose? Trump's War on Civil Rights. He's a great friend, a great author. Juan, welcome back, man.
Michael, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk with you because I like talking to people who know what they're talking about,
well,
people who are informed.
We try. So before we get into the clip we heard, what did you do for the president to say Juan Williams is pathetic, he's always nasty and wrong?
He's got to stop talking to my wife.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, Michael, I just want you to give me a second here because this is so outrageous to me, so unbelievable. If I had attacked him in a personal way, if I had said something, you know, about the president's character, and I think people could say that, or say something about him and his behavior, you could say, okay, so he shot back at Juan Williams in kind.
Right.
But what happened was I was on Fox News Sunday, and Dana Perino asked me a question. She said, well, don't Democrats also want a better trade deal with China? So shouldn't they be supporting the president? And I said, well, you're right. Yes, Democrats, especially given pressure from unions, do want a better trade deal with China to stop the intellectual property theft, to level the playing field for our goods going into China. But I said this president's policies really have been so brutish with the heavy use of tariffs that it has put not only Wall Street on edge because it's unpredictable when are tariffs going and when are they not going in, so capital investments are therefore riskier, but it's also at the same time pushed the globe on the verge of recession because you see the German economy contracting, China's economy is suffering, Argentina stock market cut in half. And the consequence is that when you have such a high level of impulsive policy making from the White House on the economy, he can attack the Fed, he can blame Chinese, but it has a negative impact on American consumers, American economy. So I said that. Now that's
that's nothing personal in what you just said. That's me doing my job as a
political analyst, right?
There was nothing personal about the president, his family, his hair, his body weight, nothing.
No.
There was nothing personal.
No, nothing. Zero. And then he fires back in the most personal term. And by the way, he makes it the case that somehow he once said yes to taking a picture with me at my request for my family. Again, a total lie. I was in the lobby of Fox News, and the janitor, the guy who does the marble floors in the lobby, saw Trump come over to me and saw me talking to Trump and said, he then motions to me and says, Mr. Williams, do you think I could get a picture with Mr. Trump? Would you ask him for me? So I asked Trump if he would take a picture with the janitor.
Wait, stop. So Trump says that you basically were begging him for a photo.
Correct.
When in fact you were asked to take a photo of him and a janitor who happened to see you and Trump talking. It was not you asked. So your request to Trump was, hey, would you take a picture with the janitor, not with me?
Yes. Correct. And then we take the picture with the janitor, Ed Henry, Fox News political reporter was there. So then Ed says, let's take a picture. So he takes a picture with Trump, I think. This is how Trump distorts reality to fit his own agenda.
Yeah, yeah. And
I have people come up to me, Michael, and they say, why were you asking for... I said, I was not asking for a picture with Trump.
Well, but in his world, you were. Because in his world, he is the sun, the moon, and the stars. And all things gravitate around him. So whether you were asking for a third party to take a picture with Donald Trump, you effectively were asking him for a picture too. And particularly when it all, as you know, these things go, it bleeds into a scene where everybody decides to take a picture. Now it's become everybody wanted to take a picture with me. And that's the way it is. But that also, I mean, again, you respond to a policy question with a analysis of the current policy and the impact that it is having, in this case trade, the policy is trade, and the impact that it is having both globally and domestically. And his response to all of that is to basically say that you are somehow a bad person. And you're pathetic, you're nasty, you're wrong, all of that, because you've now challenged, to your point, his worldview of things and how he sees things.
Well,
and he personalizes it that way.
Well, it's all about him, I think, is the shorthand. And then what happened was then subsequent to that tweet, he goes before a gaggle of reporters on the South Lawn and tells them, you know, Fox News has changed. Juan Williams, what's he doing there? Donna Brazile. You remember Donna Brazile,
who was
the former chair of the DNC?
Right.
Well, she's the one, he says, that gave that question to Hillary. Why is she there? Fox News isn't what it used to. So now, Fox News, which has been tremendously supportive of President Trump at many turns, now they are in the box because I'm there. So this is, again, you know, an attack or an attempt to try to get Fox to either throw me out the door or to say that they are no longer to be viewed by Trump supporters as a reliable source. So no source is good enough unless you are just about affirming and confirming everything about the chosen one.
So that's funny you should mention that.
This isn't my trade war. This is a trade war that should have taken place a long time ago by a lot of other presidents. Over the last 5 or 6 years, China's made $500 billion. $500 billion. Ripped it out of the United States. And not only that, if you take a look, intellectual property theft. Add that to it. And add a lot of other things to it. So somebody had to do it. I am the chosen one. Somebody had to do it. So I'm taking on China.
He's the modern day Messiah, the chosen one. Eddie Murphy may have something to say about that, but I guess that's
well,
appropriate.
Given his attitude towards Jewish people as disloyal if they don't vote for Republicans and him, you know, you can understand where they may think, that's peculiar that he would use such language, the chosen one.
Well, yeah, so that goes back to the clip we played at the top of the show, and the president declaring that the Jews that vote Democrats are somehow disloyal to the nation of Israel and the Jewish people,
and
I can't even begin to put my head around. Not just a president of the United States saying something like that about Jewish Americans. And it is an old world trope to sort of put Jews in this. They're not loyal to anyone or anything other than Israel and their own self-interest. Except, you know, the money and this, that, and the other thing. But here's the part that I found to be even more astounding. Was the reaction by conservatives, the reaction by some on your network and certainly members of the elected body of the Republican Party, who were so intricately trying to parse their words to sort of give the president the best benefit of the doubt possible. What's up with that?
I'm talking to Michael Steele. I think, Michael, you should tell me because I don't get it. You know, one of the many things I admire about you is you're a truth teller.
Yeah.
And I know that when you were chair of the party, even you were a truth teller, and that pissed off a lot of people inside the party.
It did.
But to me, what you got here is people who live in fear of Trump bullying. You know, to me, having just tasted a little bit of the fire of his bullying in the last few days, you realize how intense it can be that all of the people who, especially online, who think that they are going to echo the president's message, they're going to hammer you for being, you know, torched by the president. There's a lot of people who want to play along. And
yeah.
There's a lot of venom and, you know, outright racism on social media. And then on the phone and on your email account and everything else, and then you start to get concerned. Well, I guess a lot of people also worry if you're in political office about being primaried from the right. You know what's already going on with Justin Amash in Michigan. We remember what happened in South Carolina with the former governor. So it seems to me, you know, when I think about so many of the Trump policy failures and talk to Republicans, they say, well, if we'd had a different speaker, if it hadn't been Paul Ryan, if we'd had, you know, more energy from some of these people who were in the Trump administration but really weren't Trump people, and they talk about Rex Tillerson or
right.
they talk about what happened with General Mathis. I'm like, are you kidding me? There's always something else and somebody else, even fellow Republicans, but it's never Trump.
Well,
and it seems to me right now we have such a high number of retirements of Republicans. I hope you've noticed in the House, it's like they're hitting the door.
Yeah,
if you're not a Trump Republican, you're getting out.
You're getting out. We're up to close to 15 at this point. I think the last number was somewhere around 13 or 14 members who have retired on the Republican side of the aisle from, in most cases, districts that will be competitive, that Democrats could add seats to their number. Now, I've got some folks who are smoking all kinds of Kool-Aid, and that says something when you start smoking Kool-Aid. you know, they're past the drink stage. They just inhaling that shit, whatever they can get their hands on it. But They're of the view that, you know, not only will Republicans expand their majority in the Senate with Trump at the top of the ticket, they will also reclaim the House, and Kevin McCarthy will be the new Speaker of the House. I don't know, based on what I've seen and certainly on what you just put on the table, I just don't see that math at this point. I see, despite all the dysfunction, which is definitional of the Democratic Party, particularly when it comes to this upcoming presidential election, there is a center-left and center-right coalition of voters that is forming out there, Juan, I think, which is why some in the White House are nervous, particularly what they see happening on the center-right side of the aisle with independent voters in the
right.
in suburban parts of America, by the way. That are coalescing around the idea, reflected again in the polls, that reelecting Trump is not something that they're inclined to do. The number that I just saw, I don't know if it was a Fox poll or an NBC poll that came out last week, had that number somewhere close to 50-some percent, 52, 53% of Americans are like, no, this is not my intention to reelect him.
Two things. One is there was a Fox poll last week that had, I think it was 59% of voters saying
that's the one.
Trump is tearing the country apart.
Yeah.
And what was interesting to me was there was a similar number of white Americans saying that and a higher number of independent voters saying this.
Yes.
And then today, you know, there's an AP poll this week that has Trump at his lowest approval rating in some time. I think it's just one percentage point up from his lowest approval rating ever. They have him at, I think,
36%. 36%, correct. Yep.
And so, to me, you know, especially in the aftermath of the guns, the mass shootings, and his failure to do anything on gun control.
And he's now waffling away from that, right?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of suburban white women in particular, outside of Philadelphia, outside of Detroit, Milwaukee, who would have voted, last time may have voted for Trump with all the talk about email servers and all the like, but who are at the moment just kind of like, you know what, this is getting uncomfortable. Right. I'm not comfortable supporting this man anymore.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that that's something that, again, have folks inside the White House nervous. You know, they're getting better. The staff, particularly the political staff inside the White House, is getting better at putting out on the street the tell that certain things are a problem or are becoming a problem for the administration. We saw it the first time earlier this year when negative polling showing that the president was losing to Democrats in the upcoming election from their own polling, their own internal polling showing that. When that was put on the street, it was a way to put a check on the president. You're now seeing and hearing more leaks coming out talking about the state of the president's mind, the concerns that individuals have about the dissipation of support among some core base activists, et cetera. So they're trying to sort of, you know, keep the finger in the dike and having the whole thing sort of break down on them completely and corral the president. But, of course, he doesn't cooperate with that because he is, after all, the sun, the moon, and the stars in this particular universe. and you can't corral that. So, Juan, where do you think, with all of this kind of roiling around out here, and we'll get into the moment how this is playing out globally, because that was also fun this week. How do you see the doors potentially opening for a competitive primary? I'm not saying that a Republican could enter a primary and defeat Donald Trump, but they could, given the polls that you cite, 59% of Fox polled participants saying that they don't like what they're seeing out here, what the president is doing to the country. 36% actually approving of the president and his job at this point. Does that create a platform at least for Mark Sanford or a Joe Walsh to join Governor Bill Weld in creating a triumphant of challenge to the president?
Well, obviously it does. Remember, though Trump likes to say he's the most popular Republican president among Republicans ever. That's not true, but that's what he likes to say. And, right. And you know, to help him along, he does have like close to 90% approval among Republicans. Now, the difficulty here is that even as he has that high level of support, it's in part based on the idea that fewer and fewer people identify as Republicans during the Trump years.
I applaud the one and only Juan Williams, who has clarified for everybody exactly what we're talking about. Folks are running around acting like there's some massive number of Republicans. The Republican Party stands with Donald Trump. Folks, we're talking about not just a small number, but a shrinking number, relatively speaking, when it comes to that 90%. So we've got to be clear. Now, you know, 90% of 10 is 9. 90% of 1,000, you know, you get the point, you know. So
it's a different story.
It's a different story.
So you have a declining universe of people. So the question is, when you have people who were previously self-identified as Republicans and who may now be identified as independents, are they willing to play ball in a Republican primary? What we're seeing is that Trump is raising a strong, strong base, fundraising base for either, I guess he might have to spend some on a primary, but basically for the general election in 2020. I don't know that people who are willing to fund a challenge, think that it's not going to be money wasted, because I don't think they feel they can defeat Trump in the primary. So, and they're going to that they would suffer consequence in terms of blowback from Trump
right.
to be known as donors to any rival. It makes it difficult. But your question, Michael, was, do I think that there's a platform, that there's an opportunity? I don't think there's any question because of the poll numbers. The poll numbers clearly indicate this guy's never been to the point where you would say half of the American people approve of his performance in office. Never.
Right. Never.
So are we watching then
never
essentially the implosion of the Republican Party?
Well, I had a conversation on a program recently in which I made it very clear to your point about the implosion of the Republican Party. In large effect, and I think we can now contextualize this, the Republican Party went on life support after Reagan left office. The battles that ensued at the ground level about identity, policy, philosophy, and ultimately who would be the next Reagan resulted in Donald Trump. And those battles were largely unresolved. The tensions grew between, quote, the establishment and the grassroots. The establishment continued to pursue lies about in terms of what it overpromised and knew it would never deliver on because it had no interest in delivering on some of those things, most of those things. And that base realized that, yeah, this has all been one big lie. and that a lot of the things that we were promised and sold from, we're going to eliminate the Department of Education to a reversal of Roe versus Wade to, spending less money, which was what the Tea Party was all about, constitutional order, limited government.
Yeah.
And they realized all of that was bull. And Trump saw that and filled that particular gap as it was evolving. And here we are. So the Republican Party that you and I knew and you and I used to do battle back in the day, around policy and ideas and direction, that's done.
Yep.
That's done. I think we all need to stop pretending that, you know, somehow some kind of phoenix is going to rise out of this particular ash. No, babe, we gonna burn this shit down. It's done. and now the question becomes what comes out and replaces it? Not out of the ash per se, but something new, something fresh, something that is going to be much more reflective of where America wants to go, as opposed to a look back to a time when America was great, and I think that is that's going to be a real challenge for the party.
I don't, So the question is, since everything, revolves around the chosen one, if you take him out of the picture,
yes.
Do things start to wobble and then just kind of spin off and fracture? And
yeah, what do you do, Juan, if you're one of those 90%, that real hardcore Trump person? What do you do? Where do you go? What's your think on that?
I don't know. Right. I don't know. I guess more conspiracies, I guess.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't strike me that there is going to be a structure that would say, oh, in the way that Reagan was able, even at a time when the party was having trouble, hand it off to George H.W.
Right.
Bush. I don't see it handing off here to Pence. I don't see that, Sarah Huckabee Sanders is going to be the next presidential nominee of a Republican Party,
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
I some people have been talking about, Nikki Haley. Nikki Haley would have some appeal, but is she really someone that all the Republican Party can get behind, especially all the conspiracy theorists? I don't think so.
Well, where do the white nationalists go?
There you go.
Where do they go? Where do the David Dukes who seem to have ensconced themselves inside the party and emerged as, trumpeters for Trump, where do they go? What happens to all of these pieces? To your point, do they rally around a Nikki Haley or another person of color? Do they rally around, or do they say, well, you know, it's not about that, it's about her philosophy and what she believes? Well, Nikki Haley is a pretty good conservative, and a pretty good conservative on the things that matter. And so I think to your point, this idea that all of a sudden these folks who beat the crap out of guys like you and me because we dare say, not only does the emperor not have any clothes on, not only does the chosen one expose his ass on a daily basis, but that ass is loaded with warts and pimples. And we all see the ugliness of that, and we don't like it because it is not, regardless of what you say otherwise, that's not what I want. That's not who I am. And we get beat up for that, whether you're a Democrat like yourself or Republican like me. Where do you go in the conversation when folks out there have already made up their mind that Trump is the chosen one? And as a lot of our evangelical friends would like to throw in our face, that, you know, the biblical text have ordained his presidency.
Oh, my God.
That's why I have gin and tonic starting at 9 a.m. That's just because I got to get through the day with that crap. Yeah, that is going to be, you got to start it with the G&T and call it a day. But, I mean, where do they go? Where do they go, Juan? I mean, that's, you asked the right question, and I don't know either what.
You know, I the other day I heard an interview with a Latino or Latina, a woman, after the mass shooting in El Paso. And obviously the perpetrator targeted a large number of Latinos in that murder spree. And she said, you know, she understood that Trump is not only anti-immigrant, but racist, but she had supported him because she's an evangelical. And she says now she feels like she has no place to go. She has no party. And again, to my mind, what you're seeing here is people, when they are forced to confront the reality of Trump and the kind of encouragement he's given to the white nationalist and the, you know, the violence, the kind of tribal violence, if you will, they don't know what to do. And there is no structure that can welcome them and say, we are a Republican Party that once stood for immigration, that once stood for, you know, level spending and no deficits, that once stood for free trade, that stood for the idea of welcoming and growing the party. That's not what's going on here. We have more like the Chosen One's cult.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Yeah, the whole Chosen One thing keeps throwing me for all kinds of crazy loops. I don't see this story, this reality TV episode, more importantly, this reality TV series, turning out in a way in which good things come from it. And I think, you know, as more and more people today are, again, going back to what we were talking about before, inside the White House, sort of putting out some of the dirty secrets about what's really going on, I think a lot of that's going to get exposed more and more. And again, I just don't know how that sets up the future of the country, the future of the party. And to be quite honest with you, we already see, Juan, how it turns your party into knots. It, you know, sort of.
They
don't know how to deal with it either. You know, they don't know whether to let Biden be Biden or to, you know, try to get behind the Warren Sanders. They don't know, and they keep putting out all these policies and these views that I'm like, have you guys put your pulse on the country yet to understand exactly that what you're proposing is not where the country is or where the country wants to go, that this really is something that's a little bit more fundamental and elemental about how they're perceiving this administration and their repulsion towards those things that, you know, maybe 2 years ago they were like, oh, yeah, it's just Trump. But now they realize, no, this is a problem. And yet you're sitting here talking about free health care and free education. And so I don't know if the Democrats offer any better solutions in a post Trump era, or even getting to the point where that era can be created.
Yeah, I just don't know. And it's as if we are adrift, Michael.
Yeah.
And I think part of this, by the way, I've been watching a show, I think it's on Netflix, called Hacked.
Uh-huh.
And it's about Cambridge Analytica and, you know, the damage they've done, not only here in terms of the propaganda spread, the kind
right.
of use of social media to target people, to find people who are uncertain and persuadable and then change their vote. But they're doing this all over the world. I mean, Brexit would obviously jump out as a prime
right.
example. But even in small places, you know, Caribbean nations, they go in and they divide people, the Indians from the blacks, and, you know, manipulate the elections outcomes. Obviously, so much of what they do has this kind of nationalist and racial appeal to it. Just fracture people. Just separate them.
Yeah.
Turn them against each other. It's unbelievable what we are going through.
Well, it is a space that I think challenges the spirit and the core of who we are as Americans, how we see ourselves, how we define ourselves in this moment, which is why I've been so critical of my Republican leadership, because my expectation was that they would do more, that they saw the greater good, that they would be willing to sacrifice their reelection and their seat in the House or the Senate to stand on those things that Republicans had argued for fundamentally and principally, you know, thought were important. But we see now that that was not the case. So before I let you go, and you raise an interesting point about, you know, where all this can go and what could possibly happen. Back in 2016, Ted Cruz was probably a little bit prescient in his assessment of Donald Trump. Let's listen to what he had to say about Trump in 2016.
I wake up every day and laugh at the latest thing Donald has tweeted because he's losing it. Look, we need a commander-in-chief, not a Twitterer-in-chief. We need someone with judgment and the temperament to keep this country safe. I don't know anyone who would be comfortable with someone who behaves this way having his finger on the button. I mean, we're liable to wake up one morning and Donald, if he were president, would have nuked Denmark. That's not the temperament of a leader to keep this country safe.
Well, he clearly didn't want to nuke them. He wanted to buy them. And it created a particular challenge when they said, no, we're not for sale. The reaction of the president to having the prime minister of Denmark along with his citizens literally laugh in his face at the idea of selling Greenland to the United States. What was your take when you saw this? Of course, when it happened, my immediately thought was, when Trump said, yeah, I'm interested in buying Greenland, I figured, oh, no, this is going to happen. But then when they said no, I was like, oh, it's on now. He's got his nose out of joint and he's not going to Denmark. And sure enough, he canceled the trip.
Well, I should listen to you because I thought the whole thing was a goof. I thought it was just silliness. Then he confirmed that he was interested in buying Greenland. And I thought, how crazy is that? You know, maybe this is just more Trump distraction, you know, because people will end up talking about it as silliness. But then to say that the Danish prime minister is nasty for saying an absurd idea is absurd. And then to cancel the trip. And then you realize, wait a minute, he's also now trying to put pressure on the Danes and all the other members of the G7 to let Russia back in while blaming Obama for allowing Russia into Crimea. What is going on?
Right.
It's just like it's down the rabbit hole.
It is. It is. Because there's no way in hell, particularly after this episode, that the Danes or anyone else are going to acquiesce to Russia coming anywhere near the G7,
number one. God.
He has no credibility with our allies to even make that request. But number two, to your point about the rabbit hole, it is one of those things that he loves to create. He tosses the bright, shining objects into it, and everyone kind of follows it. But the interesting part to this story, I thought, was the back end of it, where it was revealed that, guess who else was going to Denmark after the president? None other than the former president, Barack Obama. And
indeed,
one cannot help but think, Juan, that Trump, in the final analysis, did not want to compare the Danish reaction to Barack Obama and the Danish reaction to Donald Trump.
Well, I guess, you know,
that could be it too.
Didn't the Swedish give him the Nobel Prize? I think that went to Barack Obama.
You know? I think it did. Juan Williams, he's one of the best folks. He is the author of the new book, What the Hell Do You Have to Lose? Trump's War on Civil Rights. And you can catch him absolutely on Fox News Channel, where he is an analyst for at least today. We'll see what happens when he gets back to the studio. No, I think you'll be fine. But give my best to my friends over there, and all the best to you, Juan. And thank you so much, man, for taking time to come on and do a little chat, a little checklist.
One quick question for you, Michael.
Yeah, what's that?
What do you think happens to the Republican Party? And do you think that there'll be a primary challenge?
I think in the end that there will be. I think that there are some interesting developments that are beginning to coalesce themselves and around the idea of this narrative. Certainly what Mr. Scaramucci is doing is one piece of that, but that is the latest piece. There have been a number of folks who've been looking at this strategy for a while, and what is working out is those pieces are lining up. So that's today before Labor Day, 2 weeks before Labor Day. We'll see where we are when we get into, October, but there's still some runway there for a challenge. And in fact, Joe Walsh seems to be committed to at least getting in the race to join Wells. So with these two, and Walsh, as I said, is one of those conservatives who has cachet.
But does he have money?
Well, that'll be the interesting test. Now, on the money side, let us not, think that every dollar in the Republican, ether is a Trump dollar. It is not. There are significant donors with significant cash and influence who are ready to play. So I don't think, that Joe, he's not going to raise the kind of money that a Trump would. But here's an interesting little thing, and maybe you can do your investigative piece on this, because you have a lot of these folks on your air. They don't come to my network. But the RNC is, I think, put itself in a very ticklish, if not dangerous, pickle, because it has aligned itself in such a way that it is a political arm of the Trump campaign. It should not be, in my view. It should remain an independent arbiter of the presidential race. Donald Trump is no different than any other candidate for the nomination. He has to go through the same process as anyone else. And so if I'm a candidate like a Joe Walsh or Mark Sanford who gets into the race, what does the RNC do when I come knocking on the door for a meeting with the chairman to talk about how the RNC could help provide me with some of the same tools that they're providing the other candidate?
Well, that the RNC is an arm of the Trump White House at this point.
Well, it is, and it shouldn't be, and it's not.
But it is.
But it is, and so. So it now operates to the exclusion of all other candidates. If I'm a down ballot candidate who's not a favorite of Trump, do they now not support my efforts if I happen to be the nominee in my district or my state for an office, and Trump is, and I don't support Donald Trump, or I'm not rabidly sycophantic about him. How does that play out? And so this is the problem I think the party is going to create for himself, which again, to our earlier discussion, Juan, feeds into the breakup of the party as we knew it, because those folks are not going to remain aligned with a party that spits on them as a candidate for office as a Republican, when that's not how the party has performed or behaved in the past.
Thanks, Michael, and please stay in touch.
You got it, my friend. All right, folks, that does it for us. We'll catch you all the next time. You can check me out on Twitter at Michael Steele. And remember, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, all that good stuff. Don't worry about it. I'll be back. So right now, take a little break, and we'll catch you next time.